we start off chapter 9 with the topic of Lectio Divina, and I put this in the book because this is sort of a pivotal time in the book where I'm inviting the reader to go a little bit deeper, and then I'm giving them some tools for them to do just that. And Lectio Divina is one of those things that helps deepen your ability to go into a text. So in early monastic life, Trappist monks would use, and I learned this concept from Thomas Keating. They would employ this technique called Lectio Divina, otherwise known as holy reading or divine reading, as a method of deepening their studies to get the most out of the material that they're trying to take in. And I suggest that people read my book, that they read the next few chapters from 9 to 14 in such a way where you're setting down your mind and you rest in your heart while you go through the rest of the material. So some tools to help deepen your study of, you know, this podcast, and if you happen to pick up my book, and for tools to deepen your ability to take in the material that's presented, is one, we read the material slowly, savoring the words. Be very present as you read. If you feel you need to stop and contemplate the writing, don't hesitate to do so. And then two, pause and reflect on how the writing reflects on your life. So this is kind of the next step. You reread the chapter, or you re-listen to any of the podcasts, and relate what we're talking about to your life. And see how, you know, the material changes by relating yourself to the material. The next stage is, you know, I ask you to listen to the podcast again, or reread another the same chapter in my book again. But this time you open your heart in order to comprehend the reading with your soul and not your mind. And that's sort of what we talked about in the one chapter, where you're processing through the heart and versus processing through your mind and your filters. So as you are reading the writing, or as you're listening to this podcast, take in the energy behind the message. So it's a little bit deeper experience of what you're reading. Then the last step is to listen to your soul. Does it have any deeper reflection about the material that you're taking in? So as you're reading, listen for words and ideas or concepts as they come to you. And that's how we can change this into more of a living teaching, where, you know, you're not just taking in what we say, but you're taking what we're talking about, and then you're advancing the teaching. Because that's the idea. Like, I'm not interested in giving anybody something to believe in. I would much rather present material and then have it affect the listener or the reader in such a way that they deepen, you know, the things that I'm talking about. They take it and they apply it in their lives. If you want to know more about the process of studying in this style, you can look up Lectio Divina, and it's Lectio Divina. And then you can, you know, just do some of your own research on how to do this type of study. And I find that when I've employed this technique, I extract a much deeper meaning or value in the material that's being presented.
My life has great value and purpose, and I am capable of fulfilling both.
So we're going to start with kind of a big question. What do you believe purpose is, Ned?
I believe that it's God's individual will for me and you. That's the short answer. And I think I've maybe worked out this logic maybe once or twice throughout the podcast, but to get real on point with what I believe purpose is, I believe that it's God's will for us. So that's a pretty big statement, really.
Mm-hmm. You know?
I believe that my purpose came with me when I came into this world. So it's my destiny. Mm-hmm. I believe your purpose came with you when you came into this world. I don't believe that it's something that sort of built up over the duration of your life. I believe that you were born with it, and it's something you had before you even came here. It was something that was part of your soul. And it's part of, because it's part of your soul, it's part of God's nature as well. And so if fulfilling that purpose comes from the soul, and the soul is God, is it not God's will living mm-hmm. through us? You know, because I had this concept that God's will was something outside of me. And I remember when I was younger, any involvement I did have with religion, they talked about, I'd heard the topic God's will, and how would I ever know God's will? I remember thinking as a young child, that's so far beyond my reach. And they seemed to think it was all written in a book, and it didn't seem really alive to me or reachable or obtainable. It seemed like more like rules than God's actual will. And then later in life, I discovered, you know, I thought purpose was going to be where, you know, the sky would part and then maybe a divine voice would speak out of the clouds and say, your purpose is. And I searched for purpose for many, many years of my life. It wasn't something that I just sort of, you know, thought about here and there. I searched. Like I remember being very young and feeling like I have a purpose. What is it? And I wanted it to know. I needed to know. I went and I sought out different masters and teachers, you know, asking everyone, what's my purpose? What's my purpose? Mm-hmm. Thinking that, you know, they could give it to me.
Right.
But I was just always left with what I began with.
Right.
You know, and they never seemed to have a definitive answer even on how to find my purpose. And then one day it really became clear to me. My purpose happens from one moment to the next. It's not one thing. And my purpose is a series of things that are happening, you know, that happen over the duration of my life.
Mm-hmm. See, and I really wanted to start this part of our series off, finding our purpose, with that question. It's a loaded question. It's a rather large question, but this sort of sets up the rest of this part of the interview. If we were to take it back a little bit, when do you feel the earliest introduction for a person is when they begin wondering what their purpose might be?
I think it can come at any age. I remember being very young thinking, why am I here? These sort of questions, you know, were in the forefront of my mind. So I don't think there's no one age where we could say, you know, by age 20, you should start thinking about it. I think it's something that should come naturally.
Yeah. Really? 'Cause see, like when I think back when I was a youngster, the question, it's a very common question, is what are you going to be when you grow up? You know, and we're often talking about what are you going to do professionally? What's your job going to be? Are you going to be a policeman, a fireman? What are you going to be? But I think, like, to me, that's when the seed was planted that I was meant to do something as far as a matter of accomplishments. And the problem is with that is that changes so rapidly when you're young because your interests change so rapidly as well. And then sometimes the things that you dream about or what you really want to become are squashed down by realities, or your parents are like, well, you know, that's not really a stable income, blah, blah, blah. You can end up wondering what it is that you're supposed to do for a really, really long time, and you may never know at that age, and that can become quite a stress.
Well, that's the thing, Seamus. There's a paradigm that your purpose is one thing, And that's so at a young age, people start asking you, what do you want to be when you grow up? And then you get this idea that your purpose has everything to do with who you want to be, what your vocation is going to be. Mm-hmm. What if your purpose was much bigger than a job? You know, we correlate this idea that your purpose has everything to do with your job, and that's your purpose in life. Well, I'm much more than Mr. Tattoo. Like, just because I do tattoos for a living, you know, I'm way more than my job. That's not my purpose. That's one of my purposes. But the thing about purpose is that it really is something that is actualized over the duration of your life. And it's something that happens from one moment to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about purpose is that we don't ever get behind in purpose, or we don't get ahead of ourselves in purpose. You know, if you didn't fulfill your purpose for 3 years, you wouldn't be 3 years behind in purpose. Your purpose, think of it as this little ball that just follows you around, and no matter where you go, you can't shake it. Mm-hmm. It's just this thing that's constantly following us around. And when we live in the moment and we surrender ourselves over to the soul, to the silence, your purpose becomes self-evident. Your purpose is evident in one moment to the next.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like who is showing up in your life? What's in front of you? That's your purpose. That's your purpose in that moment. In the next moment, it may be something else.
Right.
And I think this is what I've come to realize. And for me, it's there's so much more peace not feeling like I have to figure something out, or, you know, there's this big thing in the sky that I'm waiting to figure out, and that everything before my life would be sort of meaningless because I didn't know my purpose. And then after I know my purpose, everything's going to be just great. Nothing changes.
We're setting ourselves up too for an expectation of something grand.
That's right.
And overthinking, this is another concept, isn't it, that keeps us trapped in our mind, mm-hmm. considering what our purpose is. And if we don't ever think that we ever came to a conclusion on that, you may feel that, well, maybe I never had one. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty awful to think that your existence had no point or meaning.
And that's sort of the conclusion when people are trapped in their mind and they're not living in the moment at all. The mind will create all these different ideas, and they're just ideas. It's nothing. It's not true or real. You know, just because you think something doesn't make it so. Mm-hmm. Even this concept that I'm introducing, just because I think this, or this is what I've come to in my life, doesn't make it so. Mm-hmm. It's what's given me a certain amount of freedom. It feels truthful, but maybe next year something else will come along. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But if you, and that's the quality of not living in your soul. Like I'm in the process of, I've already started writing my next book, and the next book is about the layers of the soul and how the deeper we go into our soul, how everything changes in the world. Your outlook and your view on everything around you starts to look a little bit different the deeper you go. And when somebody, and I'll give away a little blurb from it, when you, the first layer of the soul in my next book is about people that only know they have a soul, or they may not even believe in that. It's just a concept. They have this idea that there's, okay, you have a soul, whatever. That's what goes to wherever when you die and whatever. So when you only know your soul as a concept but not an experience, then life doesn't have purpose. You know, you'll say, and I remember saying things like this myself, life's a bitch and then you die. There's no meaning to life. You know, you're here and gone, and, you know, I don't have a purpose. And all those things are true. And and the first level of soul, if you don't actually have any experience going into it. And in the first layer of the soul, where we just think we have one but don't know what it is, we'll say things like it's a dog eat dog world, you know, and we're competitive, we're fearful. And the reason why these are all the qualities of not understanding the soul is because that's the qualities of the mind.
Right.
You know, so and when they say you're here and gone, they're right. When they say life's a bitch, they're right, because the mind is usually fearful and angry. You know, not everybody's mind, but fear is a big portion of the collective mindset. So when I used to think, you know, when people say life doesn't mean anything, there's no meaning to life. I used to think, how could they say that? They're actually speaking the truth, their truth, because they don't know the soul. And mm-hmm. and when they die, their ego dies. So yes, there is no meaning to your ego. It has no value, and it's here and gone. So it's by turning inward into the soul and learning how to dip into that silence that we actually know who and what we are and what our purpose is. I remember, you know, this topic is so important to me. And I remember when I was very young, the very idea of what my purpose was would tear at my self-worth, because I just felt like I needed to know. You know, I knew that I had a purpose. And mm-hmm. and now that I've been able to kind of sit back a little bit and take time to turn inward, it's become very obvious to me what my purpose is.
Right.
It's everything that I've just been sharing with you.
Yeah. Do you remember the light bulb moment specifically?
No, I think it was a long, slow build up, and it was a progression of understanding. And the final light bulb moment was kind of like, yeah, life is just full of purposeful moments. And that was kind of like the end conclusion that I made. And then, yeah, I do remember thinking that life is full of purposeful moments, you know, and it just, my whole concept of purpose changed. Mm. It's no longer, it's still the most important thing for me because of what I think purpose is. I think it's specific instructions that I have to get to in this life.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about that is that when I live my destiny, it's the perfect life that's been tailored for me. You think about how if you're living your life and you're doing the things that you most naturally are inclined to do, is that a struggle? I think not.
Mm-hmm.
The most purposeful endeavors in my life have brought me vast amounts of joy.
Mm-hmm. I can relate to that as well.
You know, I said in the last session, joy is the heart's way of saying thank you for following
it. Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. And when we were talking about the length of one's journey to reach the goal or the trajectory, it's long and it's trying and it's difficult, but I feel like devotion and the love for whatever it is that you're investing yourself in is what actually gets you there. And when we talk about, like, when you hit the finish line, it's that extra mile that they always say, you know, oh, we went the extra mile. Now, we're talking about devotion, right? That's what you say in your book. So the other thing I want to, I'm sure that this is different for everyone. You had said that this is a really dear subject to you, but also too, when you were younger and you weren't sure what your purpose was, why do you think it was so important to you?
I knew that I had to get to it in this lifetime.
But did you think like that was your salvation?
No, I for whatever reason, I felt like that there was this intense pressure in me to get to my purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I remember when I met the Ashaya monks, how how they talked a bit about, you know, really amping up your pathing, getting to your freedom. And then I somehow knew that when I, after I became an Ashaya and I learned about meditation and I started going deeper in that, I knew that there was something there for me. Mm-hmm. I knew enough in at that time in my life that I had to really take this thing and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, when I look back at my life, like I've had a certain amount of sideways movement where I set down everything and just had to kind of take some time out. I've had that a few times, had it happen. But at this point in my life, there's no end in the sight for me, for my trek to enlightenment. There's nothing in my way.
Now, why do you think that there are expectations for what people ought to do?
It's really about projection. You know, if your parents were self-employed and your parents' parents were self-employed, then they probably almost expect you to become self-employed.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times people are projecting what is in their consciousness onto you. They project what they feel is possible for you because of what they find possible for themselves.
Right. Well, it's like the Thomas Keating story, where Cletus was a lawyer, mm-hmm. and had funded Thomas's education. He went all the way to Yale and a bunch of really fancy schools and tried to give him the best education possible. And when it came time where Thomas said he wanted to go to a monastery instead of practice law like his dad, there was some major issues and conflict with that, because there's that expectation, like his dad had put all this money into his education hoping for a certain outcome for him.
That's right.
That's interesting, because I wonder too, like, expectations, that they come from parents, but they also come from media. I think people get pretty jumbled up with that, with the definition of success. It's actually a subject that I see a lot of chatter about, is what is actual success. And people are speaking against what I thought was the norm. And I think our generation was being preached to that this is what success really is. And I think as far as living your purpose and being purposeful with the things you do might not always mean money.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other things that you're going to be provided with that give you a whole lot more satisfaction in life than simply money, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, I spent the last 25 years marking skin, and I intend to spend the next 25 years marking hearts. You know, I want to put marks on people's hearts, and I want to share and become love, to fully become the love that I am in this lifetime. That's my goal.
That's amazing. I love that quote. Let me ask you then, buddy, 25 years as a tattoo artist now, you, and I've seen this pivot that you've been taking. It started, you know, I saw the You Matter come up, the charity events and this and that, and then your book, this podcast now. And it seems to me like there's become like a little bit, like a slow withdrawal from tattooing, and you're positioning yourself in a different place now. Is that as slow of a transition as it seems to be from my perspective as to how you're pivoting yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's funny, because for almost all the years I've been a tattoo artist, there's been a long-standing rumor that I'm getting out of tattooing. And they're probably right. At this moment, you know, no, I'm still working. And will I always do tattoos? I'm sure I'll do some. But I at this point in my career, I'm more interested in serving my purpose, and we'll see what unfolds. I'm not a fortune teller, you know, and I'm more about living succinctly in this moment than I am predetermining future outcomes for myself. So in this moment now, I'll just go with what I'm being called to do. And what's I'm going to continue to live the life that's purposefully mine.
Mm-hmm.
I was told many years ago not to become a tattooist.
Who told you that?
It was people I worked with in the factory.
Okay.
And then just other people that I knew, acquaintances, friends, like, you know, just do that as a hobby. You probably won't make any money at it. People projected their own expectations of what I should do.
Uh-huh.
And I remember people saying, you know, like, what if I think we talked about this in one of the podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, life has just been really sweet, and I've had so many opportunities because of my vocation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have a real devotion to the trade of tattooing, and I've taken in my career, I've traveled around and I've interviewed 200 of the top tattoo artists in Canada. So I have some traction on a project that I've been working on for about 10 years. And it's a book about the Canadian history of electric tattooing.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be something that you will see come from me as well.
Now, something I wonder is if there's a way to discover a purpose without creating expectations and fantasies in our minds about it. And how do we really know what is reality?
I think I answered part of that just in speaking just now. I'm not creating expectations about my future. I'm more interested in living what's present in my life. So how we don't create expectations is allow your purpose to happen naturally. Don't squish this moment into something that it's not. That's only, again, that's your mind chasing your desires, chasing the ideas in your mind. It only draws you away from your purpose. Your purpose follows you around each step of your journey, like I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to chase it, you know, and we don't have to try to figure things out. And that's part of that whole idea of, in when we're talking about letting go, that we stop pushing the ball uphill. We simply allow what our purpose to be what it is from one moment to the next. It's mm-hmm. like we surrender ourselves in our purpose, you know, from one moment to the next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, there are people who might think to themselves, you know what? I think this is what I should do. And then they may look at, you know, well, you know, there's a little more of a salary. It's to do with something that I maybe I like that more. I'm more interested in it right now. There could be a whole lot of reasons why someone might have, say, a career switch or something like that. And it could be also because of another motivating factor could be the fact that they don't like what they currently do, or they no longer like it, or maybe there's politics at work or other things that are turning them off. And what I mean, I guess, is like our mind could dream up and cultivate an idea as to what we think our purpose is. Mm-hmm. If we're saying our heart knows what our purpose is, differentiating between our mind and our heart and knowing what our true purpose is, I think could be difficult, because I would say in my experiences is that you don't really know until you start treading. And then you start to, especially if you're aware and you're starting to realize the benefits or the qualities of what it is that you're doing, that you're considering it as your passion, it takes some time for it to materialize and for it to really show you this is totally what I should be doing. Mm-hmm. You might not know that straight away, but like there could be big uprooting and a big shift and a big change and big risk mm-hmm. as well in order to change what it is that you're doing. And I could see that being difficult.
Sometimes it's not in the sense that that's where the mind is entering the equation, because the mind makes things more difficult than it needs to be. The mind says it tracks progress and it looks at the distance between the start and finish. and it calculates all the effort in between.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas the heart, it only deals with the moment at hand, and that's all we ever need to deal with is this moment at that's at hand. Now, you asked me in that question, how do we know what is reality? And the difference between dreams and reality is what you're willing to believe in. There's a vast amount of reality in our dreams, and it's more of a matter of where are you going to put your focus? Where do you see yourself? And just allowing your greatness to kind of come forth. You know, sometimes people are afraid to begin because they're not willing to accept their greatness.
Mm-hmm.
I was told I was going to write a book that would change the world. I've sold about 700 copies at this point. I don't think it's changing the world, but it's changed my world. And I don't really care if that's true or it's not true. It doesn't really matter about that. I almost felt like a bit of pressure, and I set down the idea of writing when I was told that by a friend of mine who's a very gifted psychic, Carrie Lynn Shellhorn, or she's a gifted medium.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, like the idea of that was just like, well, I don't know. Like my ego grabbed a hold of that and said, no way. Like, that's just crazy. Mm. But again, my job is only to worry about what's in front of me right now. And that's all we ever have to deal with. And the rest is details. The mind likes to fuss over the minuscule little details, whereas the heart just knows, just keep looking forward, just kick away the details will just take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I never worry about the details.
So what tends to happen, do you think, to people who are living another's purpose?
This is something that came to me, and I wrote about this in the book. And this was a concept that I realized I was living my parents' purpose. And I think a lot of people do this. We will start to live other people's purpose. You know, you'll live your child's purpose, or you'll live your wife's purpose, or your parents' purpose. And you know, it's not that their purpose isn't wonderful, but it's not yours.
Right.
It's not in accordance to the destiny that lies inside of your soul. So, and then we'll adhere to social norms and gender roles. And again, you know, none of that is purposeful. I remember being a young man, and I was very sensitive, which would position me to be a sissy or a wimp. And so I just kind of conform to gender roles. Just act like an asshole, sort of try to be a tough guy, which was like wearing shoes that didn't fit. And in the process of trying to live another person's purpose, or live an imposed purpose that was not really meant for me, I become more angry and unfulfilled in the process. I realized that when I was living somebody else's purpose, I was living more for my mind than I was ever living for my heart. And the problem with living from our mind is that the mind only knows what we've put into it. It has no idea about the larger context of life, whereas the heart, it knows everything, because the heart is the doorway into the soul, or it's the God inside of us, and God knows everything. So why would you take just a slim little stick of knowledge out of our mind versus drawing our wisdom from deeper within ourselves? And a lot of people will negate, or they'll bypass what I'm saying, like, oh, you know, I'm the people that think they're really clever. But it's just a long-standing truth that the real gifts of life, or the real intelligence, is the wisdom that's come out of the silence in you. It reminds me of a story that my old teacher used to say. Mm-hmm. And he talks about this famous inventor. Man, I wish I knew his name. But this famous inventor created all kinds of different gizmos and gadgets and garden hose attachments to major inventions. So there was this one invention that he was trying to create, and he couldn't do it. And he had one of the most brilliant minds in the world, yet he couldn't figure out this one invention that he was trying to make. And so he finally resolved, and he'd never let any idea go. He was always able to do the things that came to him and invent the things that came to him. So this time he said, you know what? This one's the one that's going to get away. So he decided to set everything down and take his dog out for a walk in the park. And while walking his dog, he suddenly realized how to create this thing that he'd been toiling for so long. He went home and it worked. It was it. That was the answer. And then this was his greatest invention he'd ever made. And he suddenly slumped into sadness, which turned into depression. And what the guy realized is that when he looked at this thing that he created, he realized he couldn't take credit for it. It was truly not his creation. And then when he looked back at all of his creations, he realized none of them come from his mind. They all just came to and through him. So he knew that this invention that he had created didn't come from him, because he had already exhausted every corner of his mind. And having one of the most brilliant minds in the world, he was able to put things together in such ways that, you know, would just baffle most of us. But he exhausted his mind, and he realized that all of his inventions, including the most miraculous one that he just created, were the product of the silence. They came out of the wisdom of the silence, and it was God moving through him, and that he had very little to do with the whole process.
Oh.
You know, and all we ever really need to know is what's in front of us, the next 200 feet. Jack Canfield tells a story about you can drive all the way across the country in the middle of the night, and all you need to do is see 200 feet in front of you. You know, let the headlights do all the work. You just need to see 200 feet in front of you. And I think that's such a beautiful metaphor for life. We're planners. We like to plan things because that's what the ego likes. That gives the ego something to do. The ego wants to plan and predict and weigh and judge and calculate the whole trip of life. Where life is really unfolding on a live feed.
Right.
You know, my future plans, it may never come to pass. Mm-hmm. So all we really need to do is just keep looking in front of us. And it's okay to make some plans. It's okay to have some long-term goals. But allowing flexibility is what keeps us from getting too hung up on those.
Yeah, right.
And there's some logical things there too, like saving for your retirement or things like that.
Oh yeah, for sure. Absolutely. So in your opinion, when do you think that people tend to change and choose to live their life?
There's some different awakening points in life, and there's several classic points where people have a greater tendency to awaken. I remember the doctor that I used to hang out with, his name's Rod Johnson. I probably never said that in the first podcast, but Rod used to say that you know, there's different points where people naturally start to awaken, and I think usually there's when people get to a certain point and they haven't been fulfilled in their life, or they decide that they really want to get into their soul, is when things start to really happen for them. I had to get into a place in my life where I became hungry for change.
Mm-hmm.
I needed things to be different. And I almost needed my mental health to take a dive, you know, to force me to get on my motorcycle and want to drive into a brick wall. You know, I didn't need to hit the wall. I needed the pressure that built, that drove me to want to do that, and then to want to get on with what I'm really here to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there, and for everybody, the catalyst for their awakening and to really choose to awaken in your life, it'll be different for everybody.
Never settle for a life that is less than purposefully yours.
Yeah, right. So you have in the book, you explain 4 steps, how to live with purpose. Could you go through those with us?
Here's my take on how to live on purpose. And I've narrowed it down to 4 steps. Learn how to let go of your thoughts. Number 2, follow your heart and listen to its wise instructions. Number 3, only live a life that's purposefully yours. And Number 4, live deeply in the moment and watch how you can serve the world rather than how the world can serve you.
I in particular enjoy that last one there, how this is almost like the 4 you instead of 2 you bit that we talked about in the other podcast session there, how you can serve the world rather than how the world can serve you. That's just awesome. I love that.
And I think that was the ideas about that came to me with when I was with the Ashayas. They talked quite a bit about the high road to unity is through service. That was a phrase that they said a lot. And so they believe that, you know, you have to give service. That's part of what we're doing right now. We're serving the community through doing these podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's going to be a free version that comes out, and there's a paid version if you want it all in one go.
Mm-hmm.
But we're serving.
Absolutely, man. So why do you believe that some people don't break through and as a result they become stagnant?
St. Augustine, or Augustine, said, one of my favorite sayings from him is that habit, if not resisted, soon becomes necessity. Mm. And that saying has been in my mind for many years since the day I read it. Habit, if not resisted, soon becomes necessity. People get into their habits and then they turn into obsessions or addictions. And we sort of get caught going around the same loop in life. And if you're stagnant, it's not because you're any less purposeful in any moment of your life. It's because you're probably trying to recreate and control your days.
Hmm.
You know, and if for anyone that's feels like they're stagnant in life, maybe it's time to change up your job. Maybe it's time to look at the status of your relationship with your friends and family and your partner. Maybe it's time to change your relationship with your mind. Maybe it's time that you listened to what you really know already inside of you. Because I don't believe that people don't know what's right and in alignment for them.
Mm-hmm.
And more often than not, I think that we ignore the fact of what's truly inside of us. We're afraid of our greatness, or we're afraid of failure. And maybe one or two or both kind of keeps us from moving forward, and we allow ourselves to become stagnant.
That's amazing. That's just so good. And so many people will be able to relate to that. I'm sure of any of those examples that you provided, which are day-to-day, very regular things, nothing too extraordinary there. Those, yeah, just shake up the bag. Mm-hmm. Now, another thing too, you actually talk about this in the book, and we're talking about being your own support team in your life and how important that is, if you could break that down for us.
Mm-hmm. That's incredibly important. And people are busy. Everybody's busy. Nobody has time to be your first player. You know, Nobody. Who has time to be the captain of your team? You have to be your own first player. You have to be the one that starts all your endeavors in life. You can't wait for... Sometimes the train will just keep rolling. You got to jump on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you can't support yourself, then why would you expect the world to support you?
That's a very good point.
Ask yourself that question. If I can't support myself, how do I expect the world to support me? And I never got to and through anything by waiting for somebody else.
Every great adventure begins with the courage to face the unknown.
I wonder why people do place that responsibility on everyone but themselves. Why do you think people do that?
Well, it's like cutting the lawn. It's easier for me if you do it.
I understand your point. But, I mean, let's go a little further than that. I mean, should there be some pride in the things that you achieve on your own? Like, if I cut my own yard and I'm sweating out there and I make it look nice, I'd rather do that than have you do it.
I could take a lot of pride in having you cut my lawn.
That's funny, man. All right, let's switch gears here. So talk to me about the differences between authentic engagement with life and extracting worth from our actions.
Okay, this is great. Our authentic engagement with life is us claiming and living our own purpose, okay? So we're in control, we're doing our own thing, and we're living the life that is purposefully ours. And the idea of extracting worth from anything, that's part of it, is more about the ego. Mm-hmm. The ego needs to feel worthy. The soul doesn't. So your soul is actually perfect and pristine, and it requires nothing. The idea of needing, the part of us that needs to claim our worth, is really the ego. And I used to go to great lengths to feel worthy. And the fact that I was born breathing makes me worthy. There's the idea that, you know, myself, I would put myself worth up for debate over many things.
Mm-hmm.
If I tripped and fell, and in front of people, my self-worth was up for debate. I felt stupid. I felt like I was an idiot. You know, I remember one time I was driving home from the factory. I used to have a moped. Okay. And everybody called me Moped Ned. And the license plate was F0072. So I was FNW0072. So I was driving home from work, and I was on my moped, and my lunch pail was on the front brake, or the back brake.
Okay.
And then so I could only touch the front brake. I couldn't seem to squeeze the back brake with my lunch pail. And the road was a little bit wet. I just barely touched the front brakes, and the front tire locked and skidded out, and I went rolling down the pavement. And all my friends were on the corner coming out of the bar. So then I kind of pick myself up and drive over to the side of the road, and I got my bike on the sidewalk, my little moped, and then a cop came along and yelled at me, "Get that bike off the sidewalk!" And I had to peel all my self-worth up off the pavement and get myself out of there as fast as I could. But an event like that would just challenge my ego so greatly that I just felt stupid and insignificant, because I wiped out, and mm-hmm. then a cop yelled at me. You know, I would put my self-worth up for debate so many times. And if we're in a place in life where we're trying to extract our self-worth out of anything external, or even the need to to look at her self-worth, then we're trapped in the mind.
Yeah, right. So getting near the end of this session, there's just a couple more things I'd like to know. You're saying that purpose lives in our soul. That's what it says in the book. So how do we get to know what's in our soul? Wow, that's a big question, isn't it?
And the answer really isn't that complex. Our engagement with our soul happens directly through the silence. It's a relationship we have with the silence within. And when we go into the silence within and have a relationship with that, then we directly know our purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And we just know what to do from one moment to the next. We learn how to live from that space.
Yeah. And just to recap real quickly, again, so why is it so important to live your purpose?
And that's how we started this interview. It's God's will for us. And what I come to understand is that there's a concept in Christianity that says God's will be done. That's part of the Lord's Prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about that sort of, if it feels like if there is a God, you know, maybe some people don't believe in God, but if there is a God, you would think that God's will would actually happen. So I believe that we'll get to the will of our soul or the purpose and actualize that, and it will happen. And I believe that it actually happens over the duration of our life.
Right.
And when I say duration of our life, maybe we have 10 lives. I don't know. That's a whole nother topic there, but I believe that God's will happens over the duration of all of our lives or over the duration of our entire life, and that we'll eventually have to get to that before the soul dissolves itself back into God itself. Because eventually the idea that there were a separate soul or a fragment of God is nothing more than an illusion when we get far enough inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
So do we have a purpose? We have many purposes. And we have many purposes, and the idea is to serve all those purposes from one moment to the next.